Blog Talk Radio.
Beating through the sound of flashing
Welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters. And you never know, maybe a Twisted Mister or two. And hello, Pam, and hello, Naomi. Welcome to the party.
Hello.
What's happening?
Hello.
Welcome
hello.
To Story Night.
Doing good.
Story Night. Yes, very good. I'm glad to hear that. Yes, we occasionally do Story Nights, and I love them all. They're always fun. And I'm sure this will be no different than the others. I'm sure there'll be a lot of really good stuff out there. So what's up, Pam?
Oh, not much. The weather is warming up. We reached up to 35 today, you know.
Nice.
Yes. Life is good.
10.
And all that. How about yourself? What's up with you?
No sense complaining. Everything's all right. You know, I'm surviving.
Better
than I was a couple weeks ago. You know, hanging in and trying to get better than I will be, you know, today. So, you know, you never know. I know it sounded kind of screwed, but I know what I meant. So, go on, Pam, tell us about your prompts and where you found
all right,
these wonderful prompts.
Yes. Well, variety. Well, as you had mentioned, it had been a while. I had thought it had been a while mm-hmm. since we had done a Tell Us a Story show on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
So I gathered up a variety of prompts, fairies, gnomes, doors, paths, stairs, bees, mushrooms, frogs, and even a couple of squirrels. And I put up a contest with all these different prompts, told people to write us a story. It could be in free verse or rhyme. It just had to be a story. And we got a lot of great responses.
Excellent.
And, you know, it's fun to do these because, of course, being a story, you want to give people a little bit more leeway as far as word count goes. So instead of the usual 80 to 325 words that I put, I think I put something like 125 to 625 words were allowed. Yes. So we will have some longer reads tonight. But we also have some that are just, you know, average. So, you know, it's I hope everybody has their tea or their flavored water next to them, whatever it is they use.
Yeah.
So, but it's going to be fun. Absolutely. It's going to be a great show. I've been looking forward to this.
Awesome. Yeah, our story nights have always been good ones. I think we just got caught up. I think I got caught up in, like, the Halloweens and all those the other thoughts, you know, the bigger pictures. And I just kind of lost track of the story nights, but I'm glad you picked it back up. That's excellent. Absolutely excellent.
Yeah, I think it is something that needs to be done every once in a while. You know, something fun, something.
I agree with that. It's something different. You know, sometimes when you do something just a little bit different, it kind of gets that little something out of your system, and you can go back and do what you normally do better. If that makes any sense, I think it does, though.
I think it does.
Yeah, it just kind of frees you up a little
brain.
Bit. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's exactly it, too. So, so I'm looking forward to it. Very cool. Yes. Okay.
All right.
I want to make an acknowledgement, too. Someone had written us a message saying that we should put the names of all these artists on all these images. Thing is, sometimes, like, I know I've gone through Facebook and I pick up, images here and there from my post, or not my post, but from the feed, and they don't have names on them. Now, I went in and I tried to look them up on another thing. One of the applications that is available, and I can't get them to work, so I'm a little silly. I'm not sure what I'm doing wrong. So if anybody wants to send me like a refresher course or a hey stupid course, you know, to like Google for Dummies or something, I'd be happy to take it. Tell me how to make that work, because if I find something in my feed on Facebook, you know, I don't know who the artist is, but I do try and share the fun stuff. you know, for everyone. So anyway, that being said, I love all the pictures, Pam. I do. I think you did a fine job.
I think that was a really good point made, and yes, we definitely need to make sure in the future to credit the artists, but I have to take the same course because sometimes, you know, I get art from sources and, you know, there's no artist named, and I try like the Google search, like, you know, it says search this image, and I get nothing, nothing, so... But definitely be good to be able to know how to do that.
The contest I have up, the Red Dragon contest, right? I took one of those images and tried to find the root of it. Now, mind you, each one of those images has the artist's name on it. And I put that in for a search, and they came up with nothing. So, it's got to be me. But if I can't find something that has the artist's name already on it, you know, I don't know. Makes me a little skeptical. But I'll be happy to look them up. Honestly, I don't have a problem with that. But if I don't have them, usually that's why you don't get them. I have no idea. Anyway, that's it for me. I'm being quiet now. It's all yours, Pam.
All right. Well, I am not going to start us with a classic poem because it is Tell Us a Story Night, and we do have some longer rights. So I'm going to start right into our contributors from the contest. And the first story I have put up is Reginald the Great by Daniel Duhaime. And Naomi, will you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. Reginald the Great. Once upon a time, before the advent of humans, animals ruled in their own kingdoms. A hierarchy existed whereby there was a king and his noble knights. Among them was a great and powerful magician. That was a mouse who possessed a book of spells that was written by his ancient ancestors, where they obtained the knowledge was unknown. The mouse was called Reginald, the great magician, who always carried his staff made from witch hazel to cast or conjure spells. He held sway over the elements of air and water. All the other animals feared him because they knew what he could smote them with one word. No one knew where he lived except Reginald the Great, waving his wand in a circular motion. A waterfall appeared, set before a cave. His dwelling consisted of all the Amenites stones were gathered together in a circle, and a crystal lay inside for heat, which he got from a fallen star. His bed was made from a tiny fuser that gave him warmth from below the surface, and he only drank from the fountain of eternal youth to sustain himself. Reginald lived a quiet life of solitude until men appeared and he knew his time was over. So he whipped up a puff of smoke and disappeared into another dimension. End poem.
Wonderful read, Naomi. And this is such great storytelling by Daniel Duhaime. You know, I really like when somebody takes a character like a mouse and gives them unexpected traits. I love the idea of a mouse named Reginald the Great, who's this powerful magician. Wonderful attention to detail in this. Like the mention that the staff was made from witch hazel, and a waterfall appeared set before a cave. His dwelling consisted of all the empty stones were gathered together in a circle, and a crystal lay inside for heat, which he got from a fallen star. Wonderful lines all the way through, and great storytelling. Very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, maybe I'll try it this way. I thought this was really well done. I thought it was a great story told. Wonderful imagery throughout. And there was, I don't know, I just liked it. But yeah, I always loved the creativity of the stories. You know, I loved how he held sway over the elements of air and water. All the other animals feared him because they knew that he could smote them with one word. No one knew where he lived except Reginald the Great, waving his wand in a circular motion. You know, and then it's just, like, that's intriguing to me, you know, because the other animals feared him. So he's pretty independent from what I'm gathering. But, yeah, I love that he lived a life of quiet solitude, you know, until men appeared. That'll do it. That'll do it. They show up and the bottom falls out. You know, but yep. Dan, I think you did an excellent job this right, and I really appreciated the detail in it. So nicely done.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree, and great comment. And Naomi, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought, you know, Danielle Jam did a wonderful job. You know, of capturing that little mouse, of course, in that picture, for, you know, to begin with, calling him Reginald. That was, you know, kind of goes along with the picture. And, you know, you just have the picture of this little mouse, and who is a great, great magician. Yeah, me too. I like all the details he put in here. You know, all the what is in fantasy he put in here, you know, the cave, the magical stones, the crystals, the fountain, the eternal youth, fountain of your eternal youth, you know, a time that was that existed before humans did. So yeah, I really like this. Right, bravo Danielle.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment, Naomi. All right. And up next, we have Deceitful Garden of Enchantment by Darkened Auras. And Jean, go ahead and please give that a read for us.
Okie dokie. Deceitful Garden of Enchantment by Darkened Auras. Some of the dogs don't help me read through this, will be in good shape. With a garden of enchantment secluded by the shade of many very large blades of grass, lives Purity, the white-haired fairy nymph, and her beloved Angora rabbit companion, Puff. Bathing one day in the Serenity Pool, Purity hears a pebble fall and clack onto the cobble path that leads to her temple home. Startled, she gasps and looks towards the sound. "Who goes there?" she yelled in a trembling voice, trying to sound tough. Suddenly, a little girl with bouncing golden curls stepped around a corner, looking every which way in total awe. "Wow, this is real," the little girl whispered to herself, almost as if she'd never seen or heard or seen Purity. "Oh, a child," Purity said to herself, standing up, her eyes lowering in sadness. She picked up Puff and slowly approached the little girl. "Welcome to my garden of enchantment, young one," Purity said, with a faltering smile. "Can I stay here forever? It's so beautiful," the child asked. "Of course you can. Come let me douse your memories of old in the Serenity Pool." "And you'll never have to leave," Purity replied. Of course, what she failed to mention was that her garden of enchantment was an afterlife of sorts. The child could never have left regardless. Purity often wondered how a place so wondrous and magical can only be found through tragedy. End poem.
Aww. Great read, Jean, and a wonderful write by Darkened Auras. I have to point out, I think she did a really cool thing there with the pictures, because if you'll notice, she actually took the picture of the dark winter fairy with the blonde hair and put it in the picture of the stone path near the water, so that it looks like mm-hmm. the fairy is kneeling right next to the water. And I thought that was so cool that she did that. And Naomi, your thoughts on this wonderful story?
Yeah, you know, and she even leaves us with a, you know, what do they call those? Purity often wonders how a place so wondrous and magical can only be found through tragedy. She left us with that thought, you know. Amazing way to finish it off. My gracious, you know, that's like a, this is like a true fable, you know, and with a wonderful thing to ponder over, you know. Of course, it's a garden of enchantment, but it was the afterlife. So yeah, you know, you had to go into it. You had to pass through death first. So you know, just a wonderful way. The dialogue was intriguing. The whole rite was intriguing and enchanting and captivating. So well done, Dark and Doris. Amazing rite. And you know, she put this in not too many words. So wow, what an achievement. Bravo.
Yeah. I get that. Usually when I try to write a story, I end up having to edit out a few hundred words because I go like 900 words or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was great. That was great that she did this poignant story in only 226 words. And a great comment, Naomi. And Jean, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Thanks. I thought it was nicely penned. By Dark and Doris. Short and well told. Great details throughout the work. Nice imagery, and that final stanza was like, ouch. You know, of course, what she failed to mention was that her garden of enchantment was an afterlife of sorts. The child could never have left regardless. Purity often wonders how a place so wondrous and magical can only be found through tragedy. I thought that was sad. It was a sad note at the very end, and I thought it was just a clever add one at the end. So nice work, Dark and Doris, and thank you so much for sharing with us. I loved it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree with you both. That ending was sad, but the sadness made it poignant and powerful. I, too, really liked the use of dialogue in here, especially as she captures the surprise and the innocence of the child. Wow, it is real, the little girl whispered to herself, almost as if she'd never heard or seen Purity. Oh, a child, Purity said to herself, standing up, her eyes lowering in sadness. And, you know, I like how you really see the whole idea of this fairy, this magical person, Purity, and the sadness that she has over what she knows her job is there, you know, to watch over this magical place that is a place of eternity where children can never return. And you feel like the whole idea that kind of weighs heavy on her shoulders. So beautifully written and very well done. All right, let's see what we have next. All right. Up next, we have Fledgling by Albert Sheppers. And it goes like this. I'd never ridden my bike so fast beyond the gate and down the lane. The others didn't invite me along. They said I was too small, too slow. I watched as they rode their bikes lazily down the old farm lane. By pastures, forest, and meadow green, to the pond and marsh beyond. I promptly packed paper, pencils, and jar and net into my tiny backpack, got on my bike and all and like the wind down the lane to the pond and marsh. I'd never ridden my bike so fast. The sheep and cows beside the lane paused their gazing stop and gazed as past the pasture, my bike I raced. A Jersey calf by the old farm gate asked if he could become along. Where did you learn to speak? Said I. When you learn to listen, said he. Hang on tight, I exclaimed, climbed aboard the bike, and off we went, calf and me. Never had I ridden my bike so fast. Further along beside the lane, a shearling with inquisitive look asked if she too could come along. So I said, make room for lamb. We hung on tight and careened along through the forest. A small copse of trees where the birds all a-twitter asked if they too could follow along. A fledgling dove alit my shoulder. Hang on, I shouted and flew on with cow and lamb and dove and the birds circling just above. Cheered on by rabbit, raccoon, badger, and ferret, we crossed the meadow and stopped at the pond bank and leaned my bike on the sycamore tree. I looked about but saw no one, so I lay upon the meadow grass, looked up into clear morning air to watch the changing shapes of clouds. Dove flew high in the forenoon sky. The birds sang their summer songs, while calf and lamb calmly grazed on tender meadow grass. I stared into the tranquil pond and heard a fish burble, hello. Two turtles slowly swam with two swans to where I stood. Turtles' backs, hands on heads of swans steadied me to the pond island. They slowly swam where toads, lizards, frogs, and snakes sang choruses of praise. Lying upon the island bank, watching several striders surface dance as a dozen tadpoles swarm below, mirroring their delicate ballet, a giant toad, warted and brown, hopped upon a nearby rock and in a deep-throated voice asked to join our menagerie. Then into my pack he hopped. I waved goodbye to newfound friends as upon the turtles' backs I floated. Back to lush meadow banks, I retrieved my bike and shouted, all aboard, then raced the meadows all around. And the forest birds found their nests and the fledgling dove took flight. Down the lane beside the fields, calf and lamb too took their leave. I chased afternoon light home and saw the others sitting forlorn on back porch stairs, their bikes strewn about the yard. My bike put into the shed and the jar and net stashed away, then inquired about their day. They only grumbled and complained, as no fish or tadpoles they did see. One had fallen in the pond, tripped on a rock, or so they had thought. So early then they returned. My tale I told, how I'd sped after them, but did not find that pond of my ride and adventure, and that I'd never ridden my bike so fast. While telling my tale, the old tomcat and barnyard dog sat and listened to, and when I'd finished, winked and slowly walked away. The others paused, were silent, then asked if in the morn they too could ride their bikes with me. I turned, closed my eyes, and inwardly smiled silently. Then, by the garden red rose bush, I opened my tiny backpack and set Toad upon the damp dirt. Toad winked, croaked adieu, and hopped away on this day I'd ridden my bike so fast. End story. And Jean, your thoughts?
I loved the story. I loved it from the beginning to the end. I was smiling so big as he was collecting the animals on the trip, you know, on that bike ride. And then when he stepped onto the turtle and, you know, he, all aboard, I was like, okay, this is great. I think there was a lot of wonderful detail in it. I thought it was a great adventure, so well penned. I loved the imagery. I loved the thoughts behind it. I definitely enjoyed the creativity of the piece. And then when he came back and he told the others about his ride for his bike. Well, listen, everybody wanted to ride with him tomorrow, you know. Doesn't that just figure? But yeah, I think it was really great. I'm like, there was so much in it I did like. I'll go with the closing stanza because I thought, and set the toad upon the damp dirt. Toad winked, croaked adieu, then hopped away on this day. I'd ridden my bike so fast. I thought that was a clever way to tie this all up in the end. It was really great. So I have to say, great job. Let me see. Albert Shepherd. I've never seen Albert's work before, but I think that this is fabulous. And yeah, I'd like to read more. So excellent.
Absolutely. I have to agree. Great comment. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I really, really love this. You know, this is a real story poem. Because, you know, it has this rhythm to it, like a poem, but it tells a story. So, you know, it's a great merging of the two, I find. And, you know, I just love when he says, there's so much in this, you know, that when he says, when the boy says, when did you start to talk? And the response was, well, when you started to listen. So, you know, right there, that's a, you know, a nod to, you know, sometimes people are talking or things are talking to you, but you have to take that time to listen. And if you're not listening, you don't hear anything, you know. And then at the end, when he says, you know, he talks of his wonderful tale and everything. But then in one stanza, he says, you know, after, you know, everybody wants to go with him. Then the cat and the barnyard dog, they sit and they smile and they wink. And then he says, the little boy says, I turned, closed my book and inwardly smiled silently. Did he really go on this trip, or was it all in his imagination coming from this book he had read? That's what's so charming about this poem. It makes you think, the story writes poem, makes you think too. And, all that you can live through when you're reading a book. So, makes you think in a lot of ways, but, you know, beautifully read, and I agree with Phil there. Just a stunning write all the way through. So bravo.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Great comment. And I like the observation you made about the reading of the book at the end, and was it a true adventure or an imaginative adventure? I also, too, liked where he asked the calf, you know, when did you learn to speak, said I. When you learn to listen, said he. And this is beautifully written. It's a longer write, but, you know, of course, stories, you do get that opportunity to write longer. And by using the great meter and flow of this, along with only four lines per stanza, and by moving the story along with, you know, a new character coming in, you know, every couple of stanzas or, you know, and something new to see, something new to experience. It constantly grabs your attention right away, and it constantly keeps it. I very much enjoy that this was told from the perspective of a child who, whether through their imagination, you know, or through a real life adventure or a combination of both, found themselves, you know, connecting with animals, exploring their environment, and, you know, just having fun. It's definitely one of those wonderful rites that both children and adults can enjoy, families can enjoy together, and I really appreciate that. So I'm glad that Albert Shepherd was inspired, and I thank him for sharing this with us. And let's see what we have next. I am curious about the style of the poem, to be honest, because he has it on a list called Other Styles, And at first I thought it was maybe blank verse where it's, you know, you don't rhyme, but you have in a specific meter. But I'm not 100% sure about that. But that is something I'm curious about. All right. So up next we have A Portal Through Time by Minstrel. And Naomi, will you give that a read for us, please?
Okay. A Portal Through Time. The crows and ravens were at war, while monks in hooded robes did pray a conscious earth would come to fore and break the spell that gripped the day. The way to realms, a shuttered gate, surrounded by a barren land, for warring nations held our fate with past and future in their hands. The two sides battled for the trees, spoils they sought in their crusade, declined in numbers with from disease, in fertile landmass that decayed. In the abbey where plants were grown, food and medicines, all they knew, including mushrooms that were known to explore, to help explore their déjà vu. Psilocybs, cabenesis, a stimulant for conscious realm, to reach out through their world's abyss, connection not to overwhelm. Astute traveler of the mind, connecting timelines through the spores, the hooded monks guide who they find to bring them through the sealed door. Roots that reach through time and space are crossing over with these guides, now expedient with a haste against the grain of warring sides. Explorers came, could not break through this written codes. The written codes held them confined. The search went on to find the new, the few born to purpose with conscious mind. War expanded across the plains and up above the mountaintops, a push and pull of loss and gains, an endless war that never stops. Search continued by every priest, closed their eyes and opened vision, thrust their thoughts north, south, and east in hopes to find divine provision. Until one day, outside their gates, stood a warrior in his guise, in mind, was in a tranquil state, with thought projection calm and wise. The other's leading monk engaged thought into whispers, empathic call, a single question that he wagged, are you prepared to risk it all? In reply was a simple nod. The monk then brought him to the door, a meeting place that they called God, with conscious level and a floor. The air around was dimly lit, a candlelight with moving plate. Up they went to search for it, the key to open, massive gate. Within his mind, scenery grew, past and present and what's to come, gifting visions to all he knew, roaring Taurus and zero sum. The daunting answer clearly seen, spinning Taurus is powered, changed direction of this machine, for all life is devoured. The light that then dimmed with answer freed, monk and warrior both content, traveler needs to spread the seed, the knowledge gained by his ascent. A final thought came from the monk. Your destiny is all a rhyme. And in the wink and with a plunk, the man awoke into his time. The world's in peril, every verse and conscious level that is known. Ignoring it will make it worse. The world must see, it must be shown. The men set off to find his tribe, trustful warriors of his kind, to save the world from that described for a better way and design. Sukha Bin conscious climb, glowing essence to set us free, reveal the future and the time, but first the people need to see. End poem.
Wonderful read there, yes. Naomi. Thank you very much. What a great rhyming story. You know, I really like a story told in rhyme that it's epic. That's what it is. Minstrel did a wonderful job with this. It's epic, great rhyme and flow. I like how he takes us into a dark world immediately, where, you know, there's war and there's conflict, and people are trying to find answers. They're trying to find answers through the spiritual, through the opening of the mind and the heart. I thought he had a lot of fun. I mean, it's a serious rite, but I thought he really gravitated towards the idea of the magic mushrooms, the hallucinogenic mushrooms that are supposed to open the mind's eye. And I thought that was quite clever. And I like how this is a search for answer, a search from freedom, from violence. And I'm trying to find there's so many great parts to me, honestly. It tells a powerful story all the way through. It speaks on the idea of opening the mind's eye and finding those answers that we need. I guess for me, I really like the order's leading monk engaged thoughts and whispers, empathetic call, a single question that he waged. Are you prepared to risk it all? In reply was a simple nod. The monk then brought him to the door, a meeting place that they called God with conscious level and a floor. I also really like the world in peril, every verse and conscious level that is known. Ignoring it will make it worse. The world must see. It must be shown. I like that idea of realizing that, you know, unless the world is shown a different way, it's going to continue down the path it is. So excellent storytelling and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I think that Minstrel did a great job with this. A wonderful tale told all the way through. And no, it wasn't it wasn't like a fun and games kind of right. It was a serious kind of right. And I kind of liked how he put that all together, that they had done such a fine job with the details of the story. And there were so many great verses or stanzas, let me put it that way. War expanded across the plains and up above the mountaintops, a push and pull of loss and gain, an endless war that never stops. You know, his rhyme was spot on. His detail was again spot on. And I think that the tale made perfect sense. He didn't miss a step coming through this whole story. And I do have to say, you know, something about those mushrooms, I'll tell you. A lot of things have been solved with those. Just saying.
Yeah.
But anyway, it gives you a whole different perspective on things, you know. But, I thought it was good. And I liked the ending of it. I thought it was just a fine job all the way through. So thank you, Minstrel, so much for sharing with us. I really love the life. And just so you know, we have Laurent on the line.
Oh, wonderful. Hi, Laurent. Glad you could join us.
Hi, Tucker.
Well, good evening. Bonsoir. Hello, Jean. How are you? How are you?
Doing great. Yourself?
Great. Yeah, that was a heck of a piece by Michelle. It was epic storytelling, exploring the power of the mind unlocks in a universe of vast distances. A great storyline with infinite trajectories that you could take. I would be hard pressed to take any particular stanza. I quoted a couple in my comment, but I really liked the whole thing. It was a story that was best told in rhyme and very well told.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Laurent. All right. And up next, we have Be Careful What You Wish For by Stelina. And Laurent, I'm going to go ahead and put you to work right away. So please give that a read for us.
All right. Let me get in touch with my feminine side.
Well, thankfully, it's a neutral voice, right?
I just picked up my glasses to read, and I realized I've lost one of the lenses, so bear with me. Be careful what you wish for, by Stelina. Deep within the forest stood the tree, the hugest oak you ever did see. It only glowed for a chosen few, whom it knew had a heart innocent and true. A beauteous young maid with the soul of a child ventured deep into the forest, so watchful and wild, entranced by its radiance, beckoning bright. She was desirously drawn to the magical sight. Tentative was she, forewarned by her mother, tread not into the forest, for child, I have no other. Yet each day, whispers louder and louder grew from its boughs, where spirits smiled in the morning dew. Come hither, fair one, join us, our world to explore. We will show you marvels never seen before. Fairy folk, unicorns, and handsome princes will show. Just close your eyes and wish it to make it so. Taking a deep breath, she did as the voices bade, and a heartfelt wish she foolishly made. Ne'er before has she witnessed a more breathtaking sight. Whilst hesitating, turning back, the door is slammed tight. There's no escape, the voice is now taunted. You will remain forever in this forest, haunted by gullible fools, tempted by curiosity, bewitched and beguiled by our luminosity. Now in the garden of mystique she lies, pretty face adorning a flower pestle, she cries, imagining her mother's sorrowful tears. She silently screams, yet no one hears. End poem.
Wonderful read, Laurent, and what a great dark story right by Stelina. I really enjoyed this one. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Oh, for sure. You know, Stelina really outdid herself, you know. This is so captivating, you know, and what a wonderful dark story told, you know, with, you know, that thoughtful, again, thought-provoking, you know, warning, you know, that, you know, do what your mother tells you to do, my dear, or you'll regret it, you know, stay, you know. You know, just an amazing, amazing write. And the way it rhymes all the way through and it flows, just absolutely wonderfully done. I just love how she combined those two pictures. And, you know, just amazing. Bravo, Stelina, all the way. Stunning write.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment. And I like that you brought out that mentioned that it was a tale of warning, because that harkens back to the idea of the old fairy tales or the old like Grimm's tales that were often you know, served to as a warning to children. So very cool comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
I think it was just a really wonderful story told by Stelina. I love, you know, how she started out, you know, the young girl going into the forest that she was told not to go into, of course. Like Naomi said, do what your mother tells you. No, why would you do that? There'd be no stories to tell. But where is it? Taking a deep breath, she did as the voices bade, and a heartfelt wish she foolishly made. Never before had she witnessed a more breathtaking sight, whilst hesitating, turning back. The door slammed tight. There's no escape, the voice is now taunted. You'll remain forever in this forest, haunted. by gullible fools tempted by curiosity, to which can be beguiled by our luminosity. Just wonderful, wonderful rhyme, wonderful detail, and just a fabulous story, I think. You know, definitely Selena's caliber of writing, you know, very well done. So, great job, Selena, and thank you so much for sharing with us.
Absolutely. Great comment, Jean. And Lawrence, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
I thought that this was very solid in its beginning, middle, and end. A dark lyrical quality to the right gives a great deal of gravitas to the moral of the story, despite stanzas that were full of light, bright, and beguiling voices. And looking at the picture, I thought you very neatly caught the emotion in the face of the flower. Great piece.
Absolutely, absolutely. And she really did capture the emotion, as you said, in the face of the flower. So very cool. Yeah, this is an excellent dark fairy tale of warning and what can happen to someone who is overly curious and doesn't take heed of those warnings. I really like tentative was she forewarned by her mother, tread not into the forest for child, I have no other. Yet each day whispers louder and louder grew from its boughs where spirit smiled in the morning dew. And as Naomi had mentioned, wonderful rhyme and flow to this. There's no forced rhyme. It tells the story beautiful. I also really like there's no escape. The voice is now taunted. You will remain forever in this forest, haunted by gullible fools, tempted by curiosity, bewitched and beguiled by our luminosity. So amazing, amazing storytelling all the way through. Wonderful attention to detail and very well done. All right, let's see what we have next. We have Kiss the Sun by Sev. And we have a SoundCloud for that, Jean, whenever you're ready.
Yes, we do. Give me a quick second here.
Kiss the Sun by Reynaud. Strolling down a long and winding road on a quest to kiss the sun, I come across a majestic frog to lick. Hallucinogens coat my tongue. A group of fairies descend from up above, providing the powers of Peter Pan. With youthful grace, I glide towards my goal, repeating the words I think I can. Icarus is my hero. For his honor, this quest must be done. With the help of all these fairies' wings, I shall finally smooch the sun. Starvation halts my travels, so preparedly I pick through my pack. Hindsight is 20/20. Magic mushrooms, poor choice of snack. I depart with dismal desperation, reaching depth-defying heights. My optimistic outlook obscured by the magical meal I now fight. A wizardly bird and a rodent with wings aid and guide me back to my path. Progress short-lived as I plummet back down, wounded by a warrior wasp's swift attack. The sun sends its sincere regards, sinisterly said by the savage wasp. My companions, take up your arms. Our quest is too important to stop. Out of the forest poured even more creatures. Flying frogs fill the fight with their song. Mice with bows make the sky black with arrows. With sorcerous squirrels slinging spells, this won't last long. The wasp brawn would have beat me in battle if it weren't for my magical friends. As the wasps whisk away in retreat, cheers of victory ring throughout the land. Not every battle was victorious, however. My sanity suffers and is slipping away. The snack slowly sneaking inside me will have me grounded the rest of the day. Every territorial tussle has victims. The previously projected path paid the price. Forgoing road and forcing through forest, making my way with my magical mice. I'm led to an ominous doorway, lucidity left lifeless with a look. An endless field of fear-filling flowers, bearing the haunting head of Captain Hook. With my adventurous purpose losing clarity, and my nervous system in severe distress, I beckon the fairies to carry me back home, dreaming of Icarus as I rest.
Wonderful read and write there, Sev. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. You know, I always appreciate seeing new names. Sev is fairly new to me. I look forward to reading more of him, and I hope we get to see more of his poetry in the contest for LNP shows. A write is going to be fun when it starts off immediately by licking a hallucinogenic a frog and involves magic mushrooms. Wonderful humor in this. Great rhyme and flow, great imagery. Starvation halts my travels, so preparedly I pick through my pack. Hindsight is 2020. Magic mushrooms, poor choice of snack. And what I really also like about this is the fact that he takes familiar characters like Peter Pan and Captain Hook, and he weaves them into his own unique story. You know, rather than focusing on them, it becomes a weaving around and together. I also really like the sun sends its sincere regards, sinisterly said by the savage wasp. My companion take up your arms. Our quest is too important to stop. Very cool that he was inspired by so many prompts, 42, 30, 32, 23, 7, 13, 21, 14, 6, 12, 9, and 4. And I like how he seamlessly put them all together to create this story. So very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's always fascinating to select a picture like the one he did and see what it inspires, what magic is in the mind, what fairy tale comes rolling out. And this is certainly no disappointment. I'll echo what you said about the first stanza and the licking of the frog for its hallucinogens and the trouble that it got him into. I can appreciate the references that you already detailed, but for him to throw in the little train, I think I can, from Disney's Dumbo, was equally satisfying. And I liked "I Shall Finally Smooch the Sun." Now, he doesn't talk a lot about that because I expect it was fairly warm. But back to the magic mushrooms, poor choice of snack. His travails are endless all the way through here. But again, the imagination, every territorial tussle has victims. The previously projected path paid the price. Forgoing road and forcing through forest, making way with my magical mice. That's well done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Good comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I thought it was an excellent piece, a wonderful creativity throughout. And I too got a kick out of between him licking the frog and magic mushrooms in his backpack. You know, he's lucky if he ever got to the end of that path. And it's a good thing that the path goes back and forth and kind of sways, because I think that's how he'd be walking. I don't think he could have made a straight line without falling off. So hopefully the lefts and the rights all line up with his steps, you know. But I really did. I thought it was good. I thought it was fun. I thought there was great use of alliteration in it, as well as rhyme and meter. And I really enjoyed it. You know, out of the forest poured even more creatures, flying frogs filled a fight with their song. Mice with bows make the sky black with arrows, with sorcerous squirrels flinging spells. This won't last long. The wasp brawn would have beat me in battle if it weren't for my magical friends, and the wasp whisk away in retreat. Tears of victory ring throughout the land. I just thought I thought that was a great two stanzas there, and I thought they really had a lot going on in them, because there you have the alliteration. Of course, there's words that I can't get out of my mouth without stumbling or lisping or tripping over my own tongue or whatever the hell I was doing. But I just really think that it really was. It was a lot of fun, and it was great. So I really enjoyed that, and thank you so much, Sev. Excellent job, and welcome aboard.
Absolutely, and great comments. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, still went and picked up the two stanzas that, you know, I found were wonderful too. But, you know, what a wonderful story told about, you know, going into a wild high hallucination and then tumbling back to reality. I mean, you know, this is crazy. I want some of those mushrooms or to lick some of that frog there. This is really cool. Awesome, right? And yeah, welcome to this new poet here. Wow, give us more great stuff like this to read. This is awesome.
It really is. It really is. I will tell you that I personally, and this is just my opinion, I would eat the mushroom before I would lick a frog. Just saying.
Amen. Amen.
No.
Oh, my gosh. Too funny. But great comments, everyone, and wonderful writing by Seb. And up next, we have Seeing is Believing by Matt29. And Jean, would you please give that a read for us?
Yes. I will give it a try. Okay. Seeing is Believing by Matt29. There you are beneath me, the familiar greeting. Seeing you makes everything right in the world. My long-lost friend never deserting me, traveling through life alongside me. Now I must bid you come quick as we leave to find frogs, conveying the disaster that is befalling our land, where characters of mystery are disappearing, leaving no trace of where they've gone except frog is full of wisdom and will know what to do. Off we go scampering along towards some mystic creek. There is frog smoking his pipe and waiting for our arrival. Seeing us, he stops and points towards the east, explaining that the door of enchantment is the only way. Upon hearing this, we both depart with some provision. Our journey is long, and we have not traveled this far before. Seizing fireflies for lanterns, we set off into the night. Our journey is long and perilous, with shadows everywhere. Although my companion and frog are with me, I'm still uneasy. After it gets too much, we both decide to rest for the night. Building up camp, I stare out into the darkness, wondering what's next. Morning soon arrives, full of jubilation, and we are off once again. Now we leave the village behind and enter the swamp of misery. Many have attempted to pass over this swamp and not survived. The sea nymphs that swim in this swamp are magical, making you think you are seeing a loved one in the water drowning. You stop and attempt to save them, finding their grip too tight, pulling you into the swamp. And then, unable to free yourself, the swamp lulls you down into the depths of despair, and you sink. Frog has a plan. We will all wear blindfolds and not see the nymphs. The fireflies will guide us as the trusted ants who have been by our side. On approaching, the air grows heavy and despair, and cries are heard. Frog reminds me of our task at hand and to remain focused on his hand. Holding it tight, I tread the swamp's path, feeling unsteady throughout. The sensation of doom weighs heavily on my mind, and I am very tempted. Holding steadfastly to the frog, I find strength from somewhere, plodding steadfastly through the swamp to the end and towards the door. Shining brightly, I can feel the door's allure as it calls to me to enter. Frog removes my blindfold and grabs me to awaken me from my stupor. Jumping suddenly, I realize I was nearly bewitched to enter and not return. Seeing the door, I approach and close it shut with all my might. End poem.
Great read there, Jean. And what a wonderful story write by Matt29. I was really glad that he was inspired. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, and what a wonderful ride all the way through, you know, really intriguing, the storyline and everything. And, you know, with the message in here that, you know, it's, you know, you shouldn't, you know, be careful. Well, you should be careful not to get lost, I think, in your own imagination or in your own mind or being bewitched by, you know, does it talk about a book in here? I thought maybe. But anyway, to not to travel that path of, you know, being bewitched. He says that in the last stanza there. You know, jumping suddenly, I realized I was nearly bewitched to enter and not return, seeing the door I approach and close it shut with all my might. So, you know, just not getting lost, I guess, lost in the story or, you know, lost up in the, so just a great, great write. And I really liked when they traverse the pond there, you know, with the sea myths, the sea sirens, and all the way through. So great imagination, great creativity shown here for sure, and a wonderful write, Matt. Bravo.
Absolutely, great comment, Naomi, and Laurent, your thoughts.
I have to completely agree with Naomi on that, those last lines and carefully shutting the door and shutting whatever it was out with all of its might. You know, to put your full faith and trust into a frog, well, that's being brave yourself. I mean, you know, I love frogs croaking at night. It's very relaxing. They do make a delicious snack, by the way. But they lack a certain physical size, muscular prowess to defend you on a truly dangerous journey. So if the best the frog could do is snap him out of his stupor, he did enough. A magical tale.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So it is. Magical is a perfect word to describe it. So very well said. And Jean, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Thanks. I really liked this. I thought it was very well done and an excellent tale told. I think it was well written and creative. I grabbed this stanza. I mean, I probably could have grabbed like a few throughout. But frog is a plan. We will all wear blindfolds and not see the nymphs. The fireflies will guide us and the trusted ants who have been by our side on approaching the air goes by our side. On approaching, the air grows heavy with despair and cries are heard. Frog reminds me of our task at hand and to remain focused on his hand. I just said we had a great eye for detail in that stanza alone. So just
hey,
nicely
Jane.
Done. Great job, Matt, and thanks for sharing. Yes?
Hey, I wanted to congratulate you on that read. It was really, really good. There was a time when a six-line brevity would have sent you running for the green room. But now you're an accomplished reader.
Yeah, I don't know about all that, but I give it a whirl when I have to, you know. But thank you. Appreciate it.
Great comment there, Dean. Yeah, I enjoyed this very much. Wonderful attention to detail. Great imaginative lines. I really like the personification of the frog. Frog is full of wisdom and will know what to do. I also like that this reminds me of familiar things, and yet it's still his own unique story. I like how the swamp makes me think of the swamp that they go through in Neverending Story, the Swamp of Despair. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also The Princess Bride has a swamp in it too.
Yep.
And the idea that he had to be blindfolded in order to not be tempted to give in to what he was hallucinating really brought to mind. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is it the Odyssey where he gets strapped to the mast? And
yep.
His ears, yep, yeah, and so that he won't respond to the siren song. Yeah, it reminded me of that. And I like how it goes into the idea of that the here where it says making you think you are seeing a loved one in the water drowning. You stop and attempt to save them, finding their grip too tight, pulling you into the swamp, but then unable to free yourself. The swamp lulls you down into the depths of despair and you sink. Wonderful dark lines that also works well as a story, but also works well as a metaphor for how oftentimes we can end up drowning by trying to help someone who doesn't really want the help. So great storytelling and very well done.
Sam, you remember that scene in The Lord of the Rings where Frodo sees the faces in the water and collapses into the water after them?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah, it reminded me of that, too.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. I like that. Great thought shared. All right. And up next, Naomi, I have your story. So go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay. Well, this is not a poem. It's a story. Okay. And the prompts I was inspired by, well, there's the background one and then the four ones there. Okay. So here we go. Into Valhalla. Eerie felt eyes crawling on him as soon as he stepped out from underneath the gigantic stone archway into Valhalla. The elders had been mad to caution him to hide in the darkness here. This was a world without shade, where the clouds cast no shadows, where there was no escaping the gaze of the scorching sun. Nor did this desolate land provide any hideaway from the blood-curdling Hecate, giant, warted, toad-like creatures that hunted down any unwelcome visitors that dare venture in from another realm. And that was exactly what Eerie was. Not only was he unwelcome, but his elvish, silvery, bluish glow made him an easy target. Find her, bring her back safely, had been the great elder's final words before Eerie had stepped through the portal. Izael, the princess of bees, the guardian of his realm. Without her, the bees had stopped pollinating. The flowers from which all of Gehala, his homeland, drew its magic were dying. Plants and animals were withering away. Eerie knew his people would soon succumb to the same agonizing fate. Then his world would crumble to dirt and sawdust, turning into another Valhalla for the tyrannic troll Tarisic to rule over. And Eerie could not let that happen. He had to find the Princess of Bees and bring her back. He tried to fly. It would be quicker to reach those faraway mountains, but the thick soot clogged and weighed down his wings. He could only stay in the air for short distances. He clenched his jaw and sprinted into a run. He had to make it to those dark, rocky peaks before the sun slid over the horizon and the whole land was plunged into blackness. The sun had already drifted three quarters across the sky. Eerie stumbled across the baked clay. Ash hung in the eerie stillness. Its gray grit curled around his lungs and clung to the charred remains of smoldering, blackened trees. Now where had that ugly old troll hidden her? Eerie wondered aloud. He plunged deeper into the hostile, grim land, his hand on his sword, his ears alert to the least snap of a branch, the slightest gush of moving dust. Climbing into the mountains, Eerie started crawling through their deep precipices. As he came around the edge of a slanted boulder, he heard the whoosh of the fanged, slimy tongue cut the air before it whipped, tearing open his left shoulder. A monstrous Hecate leaped upon him, throwing him to the ground. Eerie thrashed and kicked, rolling in the dirt, his enemy's eyes bright red and filled with bloodlust. tried to lock him in the hypnotic gaze. Deep within their glossy reflection was a mirror of soulless void, like a bottomless well of oil and gore. Yuri's sword clattered to the ground. He rolled around trying to shake the heavy toad from his body. As it continued to roar and rip at him, Yuri reached blindly for the sword, averting his eyes from the hypnotic stare. Finally, his hand gripped something smooth and hard. He gritted his teeth as he pushed with full force into the Haggot's heart with his weapon. It was not his sword, but a jagged rock. Yuri cursed in Elvish as he dealt the blow. Numerous shards from the rock turned to fine dust against the thick warded skin, but the thrust sent the abomination rolling backwards. The blow was not enough to kill it, just stun it, but at least Yuri's eyes were free. He willed them shut and muttered the incantation, a classic one. Even kids could practice, elven kids anyway. The ground trembled as he finished his chant. He spread his fingers apart on both hands, blood dripping off his left. He opened his eyes and saw the enormous mucky green face just before his, like a lover waiting to be kissed. Its expression, caught mid-kill, turned to horror as both of Yuri's hands clamped around its head. Infernus! Yuri shouted. The creature screeched as flames erupted from under its flesh. The unholy screams of the Hecate as it burned to cinders roared through the mountains. Yuri coughed up dust and blood as he laid there heaving, clutching his bloody shoulder. Take your potion, said a voice. It was deep, like two stones grating together, the echoing words of the great elder reaching out to him from beyond the realm. Yuri shook free from shock. His hand fumbled through his travel satchel and produced a bottle. Glittering light swirled around in the brew. He popped the cork and chugged the whole thing down. It is then that he heard the humming. He tried to focus on it while struggling to his feet. He limped in the direction of the sound. There was an opening in the rock. Yuri entered what seemed to be an abandoned mine. The torches on the wall were almost all completely burnt out. He wasn't sure he had the strength to make it very far, but he had to try. As if to push him further, the humming turned to screeches from deeper within the mine. No turning back now, Yuri thought, hobbling in the direction of the screams. End story right.
Great job.
Wonderful read and write there, Naomi. Wow, I am so glad you were inspired because that was epic. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Wow, Naomi, what a wonderful read that was. You didn't make a single error. The reading was controlled. It was truly the perfect read for this story, which I might add is wonderfully written. There's no hesitancy in the voice of the author at all. The descriptions come easily. They come naturally. Fascinating storyline to begin with. You don't so much define your character with description as you define him by things you observe about him, like when he couldn't fly. I was trying to figure out, well, what kind of beastie are we dealing with here? Is it a bee? Is it something else? I was just entranced by it. And look, gosh darn it, I've done the same thing, but no fair ending like that.
Absolutely.
It's only part one. I couldn't put up the whole
thing.
I know.
Part two. I like Erie. I'm invested in the character.
I'll write part two soon.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to reading more about Yuri. Great comment there, Lauren. And Jean, your thoughts?
Oh, I thought this was excellent, Naomi. Wonderful story. And I thought you had a great eye for detail throughout. It was creative and well-penned. I picked this stanza here. Ezeal, the princess of bees, the guardian of his realm. Without her, the bees could stop pollinating. The flowers from which all Gehala, his homeland, drew its magic, were dying. Plants and animals were withering away. Yuri knew his people would soon succumb to the same agonizing fate. Then his world would crumble to dirt and sawdust, turning into another Varkala for the tyrannic troll, Teresa, to rule over. And Yuri could not let that happen. He had to find the princess of bees and bring her back. I thought that was just great because you put so much into that one stanza. You know, he gave us a little background on his homeland. You gave, the story of the princess of bees, you know, that Yuri was going to save her, you know, and stop the troll, you know, this character of the troll from taking over his land after it died. And I thought there was just a lot of stuff put into that one stanza alone. And I thought it was great. So really, really well done job. And I'm glad you did it. Great work.
Thank you, Phil.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Great comment. And yeah, I thought this, like I said, it's epic. It's enchanting. I really like how you give us this full story. Not like, you know, like you said, it's part one, but at the same time, it really introduces us to these characters. You have great imagery in this wonderful creation of characters that have both strengths and flaws. And I like that you bring us along on this adventure of magic. I really like that stanza with the Yuri's sword clattered to the ground. He rolled around trying to shake the heavy toad from his body. And then, you know, you really have the impact of movement and action within these lines. The blow was not enough to kill it, just stun it. But at least Yuri's eyes were free. He willed them shut and muttered the incantation, a classic one. Even kids could practice it. Elven kids, anyway. You know, I really like that there's that kind of that bit of humor there in the moments of the struggle. So excellent storytelling, and I'm so glad that you were inspired.
Thank you. Thank you, Pam.
All right, and up next, I'm going to put my poem or story, there is a SoundCloud for that. And Jean, after the poem is done, if you would leave comments, I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Sure. Mm-hmm. There we go.
Mercury Web Spinner, Part 1. Mercury Web Spinner was the daughter of a king to stay with her people and her land and fight against those who raided and pillaged was embedded deep within her marrow. Legend says the world had been created on the shell of Grandfather Tortoise, and that when her ancestors had been formed, they had been given the wisdom of the tortoise, the speed and agility of the hare, and the courage of the wolf. Her mother, Galene, had been born to a fey tribe that practiced the art of peace, believing there was no reason for violence. She remembered when her mother had reminded her father of this after he had returned from yet another battle. He retorted that it was her people's peaceful ways that had left her an orphan, and the ways of his warriors had saved her from an untimely death. When Galene had been pierced with an arrow and lay dying in her husband's arms, she had said with her last breath, "Your ways couldn't save me this time, warrior." After the fighting was over and the survivors both celebrated victory and grieved for the dead, King Cedric had wailed in despair over the body of his beloved. Galene was laid to rest beneath the moonlight mushrooms. Their glow would guide her to the afterlife. Mercury knelt beside the luminescent toadstools. It brought her comfort to speak to the spirit of her mother. "Mother,
father is dying and I'm soon to be queen of the Shilkotan Fae. I don't feel the title should be mine. Jesper is the oldest son. He should be the next ruler. I have told father this. He reminds me that when I was born, Marcella the witch prophesied I was to hold the scepter after him, and that her prophecies were to be neither ignored or denied. Mother, if it be the will of the gods, send a message to Marcella that I am to take a different path. And if I am to be a leader, fill my heart with grace, wisdom, courage. Let me always put my people before myself. The silence was deafening. With a sigh, she headed back to the castle, her father laid in his bed, a shadow of his former self. You went to speak to your mother, Mercury nodded. And have the gods answered your prayers? No, she replied. I believe they have, he said. I believe they gave their answer with the prophecy declared at your birth. You must learn to embrace that answer. Mercury looked at her father. I just want something in my life to be my choice. King Cedric replied, you get to choose who will be your husband. I'm in no hurry to marry, she retorted, but I can certainly tell you that Flop Sweat Weakling Moonsong is not in the running. I will not have a husband who cannot beat me in battle practice. He's a sorry excuse for a warrior and would be a piss-poor excuse for a husband. Cedric chuckled. Daughter, don't too easily dismiss the young man. He has strength of heart and mind. I married your mother, not just for her beauty, but because her strength created balance in our partnership. There was no time for Mercury to say anything else or to think further on the subject of marriage, for as the king slipped into the arms of death, the warning came of oncoming intruders. Without formal ceremony, she rose to lead her people, slay the enemy, and protect the innocent. As Mercury went off to battle, Marcella watched from the cypress tree that was her home. And so it begins, she observed, the reign of the greatest warrior queen the Shilkotan Fae will ever know. To be continued. End of part one.
Great, right, Pam. Naomi, do you want to start us off on this one?
Yeah, wow. You know, Pam, you know, she really, made a character come to life in this, you know. And also what you gave us here was the magical enchantment of, you know, the story to come, a love story, wonderful battles, you know, intriguing, you know, you just wonder what's going to be the outcome. Will she marry this guy? Will she find somebody else? What's going to happen? Her mother says the greatest warrior queen ever know. So, you know, you just want to know more. I think you really created a great part one here. Wow, you really built this character to a T, and we really want to follow her now in her adventures for sure. So, amazing, amazing storytelling, Pam.
Thank you.
Okay, and Laurent, how about you?
As ever, in awe of Pam's writing, the language you use, Pam, is rather more formal and precise in the classic storytelling style. It's an inspiring story of a young woman who know no boundaries, take no weakling for husband, or probably suffer fools gladly. The touch of having the luminescent toadstools, the moonlight mushrooms, guide Gaylin to the afterlife, I thought was a great touch. The name Mercury Web Spinner is one that excites the imagination. And when you begin, Mercury Web Spinner was the daughter of a king to stay with her people and her land and fight against those who raided and pillaged was embedded deep within her marrow. I mean, you could embrace a character like that because the characteristics of strength and blood will tell, and the legend of the world created on the shell of Grandfather Tortoise, I think, has its seeds in a real legend. I don't forget where it's from, but I will assume it's something that you read. If not, wonderful invention. Just a top-notch piece, beginning to end, my dear.
Yeah, I don't know. Native American tribes, there are Native American tribes that believe, have legends, that the world was created on the back of a tortoise. I think there's also other cultures that believe that, but it is, I did take and put in an already known creation mythology into the story because I thought it worked really well. But thank you very much.
It gives great flavor to the story, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And Pam, I got to tell you, I thought that this was, sorry, I didn't realize that Laurent was done. So took me a second. I thought this is an excellent write, beautifully penned. Your storytelling is always pristine. And I thought it was just wonderful. I took the last stanza. I could read it, but it's a little long and maybe I won't read it. But I thought it was well done all the way through. You know, you have a great eye for detail as well as most of these other poets we've had tonight. No one has missed the mark, and I love that. But yeah, definitely that last stanza. I liked it because it lined you up perfectly for the next part. And I will hope that all you part oneers will put in a part two, and share it with us. Even if you have to share it on a Friday, we'll take it. We'll take it. We want to.
Oh, there you go.
We want to. All
right. Well, I definitely will. Take that into consideration. You know me, though. I'm just horribly guilty of writing part ones for a whole bunch of stories and never getting to part two. So,
I know how that goes. I get it. Sometimes it's hard to hold your own attention when it comes to doing part two because, you know, you've already, you know, run through the excitement of part one. Part two then becomes work because you have to think about what did I say in part one and carry it forward. So, you know, I get it. I totally get that. But it would be wonderful.
Well, and the thing is like with story writing, like I have done that. I have a couple that I've written part twos and part threes. And you have to, every time you write a new part, you have to go back, read, make sure things line up because you don't want your readers reading part two or three and then going, well, wait a minute. That doesn't connect with part one. Where did this come from?
Because if you were reading a part two and you saw it didn't jive with part one, you'd say, what the hell is she drinking? You know, really, you would. I know you can. You wouldn't go tell them, but I mean, you would definitely check it out. Yeah, I know. I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah. You almost need an outline, you know, when you're writing, it's like writing a novel. You almost need an outline, like where you know ahead of time where you're going a bit. So,
The key is writing the story entire and then breaking it up into parts.
Yeah, that would have been the best thing, but
right. Well, great conversation and wonderful comments. Thank you. All right. Well, up next we have Queen of Bee by Casey Day. And we do have a SoundCloud for that. So whenever you're ready, Gene.
Yes, we do. All right, here we go.
The Queen of Bee. In the warmth of spring, she sits in the valley, humming her lively tune. And as she sways, the creatures sashay and pray for the fruits of June. She breathes in deep and breathes out life, all in time with circadian rhythm. Her workers bow down, revering her crown. They know she is stronger with them. Together they fly all through the night, giving hope to the world surrounding. All whom they pass, dip their hats, raise a glass, with gratitude and admiration abounding. But as years go by, creatures forget those who fly and stop taking time to aid their endeavors. The flowers now die, and with their demise, the bees can't fly whatsoever. And when the bees slow and hide from the cold, Queen Bee cannot keep up the fight. A century's pact, careful balancing act, now faded in cool morning light. Queen Bee lay to rest upon great earth's breast, a new world from the bed that we make. For when the Queen of Bee dies, we'll all realize we must give in order to take.
Wonderful read and write there, Casey. And thank you for the SoundCloud. It's very much appreciated. Just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in the next to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. I really love the rhyme and flow in this. I like that it's a story, and yet it's a story that really touches on a sad reality of nowadays, and that is the dying off of bees and how we take so much from nature and don't give it back, which is, I like this all the way through. It's important that both parts are important. The first part sets up the story. I like that she has the but in the between the two stanzas or between the two parts, but it really is the end that touches my heart. A new world from the bed that we make for when the Queen of Bees dies, we'll all realize we must give in order to take. Wonderful lines and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, you've been as good as Rex now. You've been just as good as Rex. And I'm not ready to call my name. But it's okay. I'll be ready for you, Tim. It's okay. It's okay. I'm only kidding. There you go. I thought it was a wonderful story poem. Great rhyme and meter, well-expressed truths in the piece, because, you know, we're doing ourselves in, slowly but surely. And I thought it was just very well penned. I thought Casey really hit all the right notes. It was a wonderful story poem. I would pick a stanza, but they're both rather long. You know, I love the introduction very much. I thought that was just a lot of, it was just wonderful the way it was put together. And then, you know, no, I'm going to stick with the first one. I really like the first one. I like the second one, but I like the first one. There's something about it I just kind of was taken by. I think it was, she breathes in deep and breathes out life, all in time with the circadian rhythm. Her workers bow down, revealing her crown. They know she is stronger with them. I think that's what I really liked in the first part. I think that really pulled me in a little bit deeper. But it was just wonderful. There's one wonderful use of, it was just very descriptive and well done. And, it was enjoyable. The whole thing was. So, great piece, Casey, and thank you so much. Excellent job.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, this read like a song. It's so beautiful, you know, but it has a great message in it, you know, to be careful about the bees because, you know, of course, you know, when they stop pollinating, the bees will, you know, the earth will go, all will start losing everything, you know, it'll be the slow downfall of our nature and everything. And cool facts, you know that the queen bee only lives for 1 or 2 years, and the worker bees only live between 12 and 42 days. And all the workers are female, by the way. And, so those are just some facts about bees. But wonderful, right, your case today. Awesome. Awesome, right.
Absolutely. Great comments, everybody. And up next, we have The Princess and the Frog by Weaver of Dreams. And Jean, would you give that a read for us, please?
Okay. This is called The Princess and the Frog by Weaver of Dreams. Sitting comfortably, then I'll begin. Once upon a time, in a world far, far away, there was a beautiful princess. She slept, having drunk a potion concocted by a frog. She had rebuffed his advances, saying, "I am a princess. Why would I ever consort with a denizen of the dark woods?" Hurt and humiliated, Frederick took his revenge. He had a plan, but it required a foray into a lesser known area of the dark woods. Having hopped through swamps, fighting off carnivorous plants, he found the keeper of the dangerous plant patch beneath a warped old tree and persuade him to hand over the sleepy time, toads he would meet. Once he had finished his business, Frederick quickly left the dank woods. An ally in the castle kitchen slipped the magic toadstools into the soup on a day the princess would eat luncheon alone. Served with the usual pomp and ceremony, no sooner had the princess taken 2 spoonfuls of the soup, du jour. 3 wise women were called, and they had no idea how to cure her. They were incarcerated for 50 years. The king then announced a royal decree stating whomsoever could awaken the prince would have her as his bride. Frederick, because he was a rather clever, but slightly warped frog, let a few months pass before he hopped up, claiming he had the solution for what ailed the princess. Oh yeah, sorry, I forgot to mention, Frederick had procured the antidote at the same time he had bought the toadstool. Up there for thinking, down there for dancing, as his wise old grandma used to say. The king at first scoffed. Then when he stopped laughing, said, "Go on then." Frederick says, "I don't want your daughter's hand in marriage. All I require is 1 kiss from the lips from the princess." "I don't see that being a problem," said the king. The frog produced the formula. He proffered it to the king, who poured some into the princess's mouth. Amazingly, she woke up. After her father explained what had occurred, and she'd stopped screaming, she lifted Frederick up, barely touched her lips to his, then screamed again as the frog was transformed into the most handsome, virile prince she had ever seen. The stunned princess curtsied and smiled seductively. With a look of disdain on his face, the prince said, "What a pity you rebuffed my advances. I have kissed many princesses, trying to find one who is wise, winsome, and worthy. My search goes on." With that, he turned back into a frog and hopped off. End poem.
Great read. Great read there, Jean. That ending was great, I have to say. Wonderful, wonderful story right by our Weaver of Dreams, Kate. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, I just love this. You know, I was following along all through. Oh, my gracious. That was a wonderful read, by the way, Phil. You know, what a captivating story. And, yeah, what a fun twist there, you know. A twist all around, you know. The frog got his revenge. And, you know, the frog doesn't want the princessy old, you know, the princessy princess anymore. You know, she turned him away. So he says, "No, not you. really great story, you know, awesome. You know, it has a bit of takes dark humor in it, we can see. And wonderful, wonderfully written all the way through. What an imagination.
Absolutely. And you're right. It does have a nice touch of her dark humor. So excellent comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
I thought it was a great tale. Good story with an excellent ending. And I thought it was well done. You know, I grabbed up the last stanza because it was the most unique of them all. The stunned princess curtsied and smiled seductively. With a look of disdain on his face, the prince said, "What a pity you rebuffed my advances. I've kissed many princesses, trying to find one who was wise, winsome, and worthy. My search goes on." With that, he turned back into a frog and hopped off. You know, I thought that was a great way to end it. It was original and it was fun. So
it was
enjoyable. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I too really liked that ending because it gave a nice twist to a familiar story. Because of course we've all read, you know, different versions of the Princess and the Frog. You have the version where he gets kissed. You have which I think is the original version where he keeps pestering the princess and she throws him against the wall. And then he turns into the prince. Yep. And then he marries her. But I like how this frog has that attitude at the end with, you know, "I have kissed many princesses trying to find one who is wise, winsome, and worthy. My search goes on." With that, he turned back into a frog and hopped off. I also really like that she brought in the three wise women. The three wise women were called, and they had no idea how to cure her. And really great attention to detail, wonderful storytelling, and very well done. All right.
Yeah. I have to agree with you, Pam. I think that what I found to be intriguing about it was kind of like, I don't know if it's the right term, as a mashup between Sleeping Beauty and The Frog and the Princess, and you know what I mean, where it was kind of pulled together. I don't know.
Yeah.
I kind of liked it because it crossed into those lines. And the three wise women remind me of the three fairies from Sleeping Beauty. You know, it's just the way it struck me, but I thought it was really nicely done. Okay,
I like that. But I feel like that's a very cool observation. Absolutely, absolutely. All right. I'm certain, in fact, I know we're going to have carryovers. I'm going to make sure to, I'm going to put those probably on Friday's Break On Through show, which is an after midnight show. Either that or just save them for another Twisted Tuesday. We'll see what happens. But in the meantime, we have the poem Flower by Candy Cat. And Naomi, would you give that a read for us, please?
Okay, flower, oh, a flower, oh, how sweet, so bright and deep, so much color shining in the light of the sun. Let me look more, it's color, it's sun. Wait, no, that's not right, not sweet, it's looking back at me, our gazes meet, it sees me with dark, cold eyes. I can't move. This feels wrong. I'm petrified. And then it smiles. Can somebody continue? I'm gonna go into coughing.
Sure.
Absolutely.
And then it's
absolutely.
And then it's.
Where are we at? Oh, you go ahead, Jean.
Okay. And then it smiles. A simple grin. Slowly creeping along its skin. Skin it shouldn't have, not meant to exist. I want to run, yet my body resists. But it does not. It leans forward with strength it hasn't got, looms over me and stares with eyes not meant to be there. And suddenly I realize it's no colorful bloom, not a splash of color to brighten the room. It's something dark, like ruined art. Once it was pretty, now that's naught. But a trick, so it can trap you, wrap you in a chain heavy and thick. And now it's trapped me, I can't flee. So I stay here, shaking in fear. And as I stand there and cower, it becomes clear to me that this is no flower. End poem.
Wonderful reads, both Naomi and Jean. Thank you for picking that up, Jean. I really liked this one. I like how she writes another one that writes a dark tale that has to do with the flower and the idea of being misguided into thinking something is what it's not. Candy Cat, another new name to me. I look forward to reading more of her. I hope she's inspired to enter more of our contests for our shows. I love how she opens up with the exclamation, a flower, oh, how sweet, so bright and deep, so much color shining in the light of the sun. And then as it keeps getting darker and darker, I want to run, yet my body resists, but it does not. It leans forward with strength it hasn't got, looms over me and stares with eyes not meant to be there. I really like how this has a very mythological legend feel to it, but it also kind of makes you think, or makes me think of the idea of a Venus flytrap or another one of those kind of plants closing in over an insect. So excellent dark tale and very well done. And Naomi, are you able to make a comment now?
Yeah. Oh my gracious. Sorry. I'm so sorry. This is amazing, thought provoking, right? I think on, we like something that's pretty and glittery. And, we were caught in it, but it's not always stuff that's good for us, whether it be money or anything, makes us a slave of it, that we can't control our need for it. It makes me think of that. My mind goes to that place. But, just a wonderful, wonderful write here. And, I hope this poet writes more for us indeed. Wonderfully done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And, Jean, your thoughts?
I thought this was a clever... I'm only going to comment on the part that Naomi read, by the way. Only kidding. I thought it was a clever piece. A nice dark story, short and so well done. And then I put in here, but it does not. It leans forward with strength it hasn't got. Leans over me and stares with eyes not meant to be there. And suddenly I realize it's no colorful bloom. Not a splash of color to brighten the room. It's something dark, like ruined art. And I could have gone down the next five or six lines too. I just thought it was well done. It was clever. The wording just kind of took you somewhere that you weren't expecting to go. It's like when he was talking about the skin, slowly creeping along its skin it shouldn't have, not meant to exist. I want to run, yet my body resists. It kind of gives you that kind of weird feeling. So I don't know, but it was nicely done. Great job. So thank you for sharing with us. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Great comments. All right, and our last poem or story for the night will be The Other World Pond by Writing Stuffs. And it goes like this. In the Other World Pond, Emperor Xin Yi resides among the turquoise realms. He has many eyes above, beneath, and among numerous trees. Creatures who live there do want to please. Among the lush plants are many medicinals, greenery that will cure any sort of ills. Xin Yi is a water nymph and sage of old, possessing the cures for anything, I am told. Look closely, you'll glimpse him arising in the air, within the waterfalls that flow freely there. Should you go to this place, do go with respect, or his undines will warn him of your disrespect. A warning will ensure your request is rejected, for to Yin Xin Yi, it means your intent misdirected. Only those folks who are the purest of heart, to them Xin Yi healing plants will impart. For the fairies within this deep other world will never allow the plant's secrets unfurled. Take heed, anyone who possesses a darker intent will become trapped in a world of fairy torment. End poem. A wonderful story, right? By writing stuffs. I really enjoyed this one. And Jean, your thoughts?
I thought it was just a really well done piece. The prompt that he used as an image to start with, I thought was great. In the other world pond, Emperor Xin Yi resides. Among the turquoise realms, he has many eyes. Above, beneath, and among numerous trees, creatures who live there, who want to please. Among the lush plants are many medicinal greenery that will cure any sort of ill. Xin Yi is a water nymph, a sage of old, possessing the cures for anything, I'm told. Wonderful first two stanzas in this. It was a great lead-in to the tale itself. And I think it was just really pulled together very well. It was not a really long piece, but I think it really aptly told the story. So I love that. So definitely excellent.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, she brought us across the world with right. You know, it has a very oriental flavor, of course, with the names, and it's Xin Yi and the medicinal plants, and it has that kind of spiritual feeling about the whole rite, that draws us in. So well written, and what a beautiful flow all the way through, and meditative piece, but it has a warning though, that if you're dark and you go into that darkness, you might be trapped in this world of torment forever. So maybe just let your spirit go free. That's what I get out of it a bit. So, very well done piece indeed.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I enjoy this one. The rhyme and flow, the fact that she did go, or they went with the name and the nod towards Eastern medicine in the Eastern philosophy and mythology direction. I really like how this talks about having respect for nature and how the magic within the plants is only given to those who have good intention. So I really like that ending. And I really also like, among lush plants are many medicinals, greenery that will cure any sort of ills. Xin Yi is a water nymph and a sage of old, possessing the cures for anything, I am told. This is a wonderful narrative and story within, not too many lines. So great writing, very well done. And this has been a great show tonight. I have had a lot of fun. Thank you, as always, Jean and Naomi, for being my twisted sisters. Thank you, Lauren, for calling in. Thank you, Delina, for hanging on the board. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Make sure to join us 10:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time for keeping Naomi, Sarah, and company for Keeping It Brief, and then join again Naomi and myself at 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time for The Art of Seduction. And Jean, anything you'd like to say?
No, it's used to a couple of party animals when it comes to tomorrow. But what a great show, Pam. Wonderful prompts and wonderful poetry presented tonight. So I'm loving it. You know, I always am a sucker for the stories. So well done, everybody. And Pam, great choice for prompts and stuff. Got everybody on the on the boat. So I like
indeed.
And I hope you guys have a wonderful show tomorrow morning. And I'm checking in with you. Okay. Sounds good.
Good night, girls.
Good night, everybody.